A promotional fee has been paid by the sponsor of this program for its editorial content. Statements, views, and beliefs expressed by the sponsor do not reflect those of WOKV or Cox Media Group.
The Consumer Law Hour is brought to you by Farrah & Farrah.
Good afternoon, and you are listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. My name is Tim Tompkins. It is brought to you by Farrah and Farrah, and each and every single Saturday, it's a free hour of legal advice. Eddie is out today, but we do have Chuck finally returning to the show.
I'm here, yes.
Joining us today also as well, we have Lloyd Manukyan with Farrah and Farrah.
Manukyan.
Yeah. The show is produced by Scott Kushner behind the boards, keeping us honest. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045.
Yes, Tim, thanks. Thanks for being here. Couldn't do it without you. Lloyd, thanks for being here also.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, Lloyd's been is a lawyer in our firm, has been with us many years, and you know, he was kind enough to join me today on the show to try to get through this and answer all the questions that we can for our listeners.
It's always fun.
It is. Call in. Any question. If we don't know the answer, we'll find the answer and get back with you. So, you know, that's something that we do throughout the week. So, and you can also email us, farrahandfarrah.com, with questions, and we'll try to get back to you. But yeah, Tim. So today, what I was thinking about what we should talk about, and I had come across an article about boat insurance for your boat. I mean, we're surrounded by water here in Jacksonville. A lot of people own boats.
A lot of boaters in the area.
Yeah,
sure.
And you know, you think boat insurance is like auto insurance, and it's very similar. I mean, there are the coverages are really similar, but there are some differences. Okay. And so when you own a boat, you got to really understand the type of insurance to purchase, because they're very valuable, the boats are. But there's typically, there's four types of coverages that you can buy for a boat. You know, the hull coverage, which covers the body of the boat. Then there's cargo, but you know, this is more for commercial boats.
Right.
You know, if you're hauling cargo around, you know, then there's coverage just for the destruction of the cargo. There's
freight,
yeah, which covers the profit from the cargo. So I guess, you know, if you were hauling something that was worth, that you purchased or manufactured for $10 an item, the cargo coverage would cover the $10. And then if you were going to sell it for $15, then the $5 profit would be covered by the freight coverage.
Yep.
And then there's the protection and indemnity, which is kind of like the insurance that covers injuries to passengers and the crew. And that's where most people are going to be concerned about.
Sure.
Okay. Because even if you have a pleasure boat, you know, you've got to remember to protect your passengers,
right,
and yourself.
Right.
And so, you know, so those are the types of coverage. There's an additional type of coverage, which is similar to auto coverage. It's called uninsured or underinsured boating insurance. And we know that in auto coverage, Lloyd, you deal with that. It's kind of, you know, it's an excess type coverage. We've talked about it many times on this show.
Right.
Do you want to kind of give a recap on that?
Well, you know, me, I don't own a boat, so I'm not really a boater. Yes, I've gone out there on the boats, but I never really gave any thought to the kind of coverage. But then I started looking at it, and you and I were talking, and there are really some differences between the, you know, the liability on an auto case and the liability on a boating case. Now, obviously, most people aren't going to have to worry about cargo or freight. But what happens if their boat sinks? Well, there are certain types of coverage,
right,
that will pay for your boat. But what if you actually get involved into some kind of collision on the waters? What if, you know, an example might be a jet ski hits your boat and totals into the boat. Well, where's the coverage going to come from to you? You're driving jet ski and you accidentally ram into a boat. Well,
yeah.
How does that boat?
You're riding a jet ski. I'm cruising down the St. John's. You make a right turn into me.
Mm-hmm.
You just crash into the side of my boat. Okay, you're driving a jet ski, right?
Right.
From that scenario, I'm going to come looking to you, and I've got a $50,000 center console that's been, you know, significantly damaged, maybe even totaled, all right? And so I'm going to look to your insurance company to pay me for my $50,000.
Right.
You know, what happens? You know, you would think, okay, well, he's got coverage. Right, Lloyd?
I mean, right.
Let's say you have $100,000 coverage for that type of thing. I would think I could just submit my claim to Lloyd and or his insurance company. They pay it. Pay me $50,000 because my boat's been totaled. That's not the case when it comes to boat. A lot of times.
I had no idea up until recently. There's going to be limitations, and it involves the property damage of, you know, the total, like kind of like the total value.
I mean, it's very simple. What happens is if there's these boating insurance policies, they have limitations of liability. The insurance companies, and this is a marine insurance type term in the policies that are found in many policies. So you got to read your policy. What happens is if Lloyd's driving his Sea-Doo, his jet ski, and rams into my boat, the insurance company can limit payment to what the value of his jet ski is after the accident.
Yeah.
So if he hits me and his Sea-Doo is worth $20,000, okay, before the accident, but after he smashes into me, it's worth $500. His insurance company can limit payment to me for my damage up to the $500, which is the value of his vessel after the crash.
Why is that legal?
It's marine. That's a good question.
How the policy is written. It'd be like in an auto accident where if I hit your Honda Accord and you had a brand new Honda Accord that was worth $30,000 and I hit it, and now because I did $15,000 worth of coverage, it's you're going to limit it to $15,000.
The damage after. I mean, that doesn't make sense. Shouldn't it be the damage before?
You'd think.
Right.
You'd think.
I mean, why are we paying insurance then?
That's the big question. So you really have to stop and look at the coverage that is available.
I mean, this is old law. I mean, some of the first insurance that was ever created was on marine for cargo ships back in the 1500s when, you know, that's how people would transport their, you know, the cargo. And Lloyd's of London was one of the first insurance companies to start insuring this type of thing. And it just kind of evolved from that.
Uh-huh.
And they limited it to I don't really know the real history of why that this type of coverage is in place as limitation of liability. But it's there. And it's, you know, sometimes you'll read, I mean, it kind of deals with, this was an issue with the El Faro cases that are happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they were concerned that it was limited, you know, the total amount recoverable was equal to the value of that El Faro ship, mm-hmm. which, you know, was an old ship. I mean, listen, it was worth some decent money, but you had many people that had died. And when that trickles down, it's really not a lot of money per person. So, you know, it's really interesting. Now, that's one thing you got to, I mean, it's just, we're the Consumer Law Hour. I think consumers need to be aware that when they're buying boating insurance, they need to look for that limitation of liability. Now, the way you cover yourself from that is through uninsured boating insurance, underinsured or uninsured. So go back to our example, Lloyd blasts into my boat, you know. But if I were smart enough to buy insurance to cover his uninsured or underinsured policy, then I'd be covered. So I'd have to, you know, voluntarily buy some coverage to protect myself against somebody like Lloyd, who's, you know, got this limitation of liability on his policy.
You guys want to go ahead and take a phone call?
Let's do it.
All right. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for hanging on the line there. You are live here on the Consumer Law Hour. What's on your mind, Chris?
Hello. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Chris.
Really brief history. Back at the beginning of the year, I had gone to a large medical provider seeking a specialized treatment. They had went through my insurance company to get pre-approval. Before I had the procedure, I had asked the doctor about any potential fees. The doctor said there, because of my insurance coverage and the pre-approval, that there would be none. I underwent the procedure. I received a bill approximately 3-4 months after the procedure for a substantial amount. I properly disputed the amount of the debt and had through the call center debt collection side, had denied them the ability to contact me on my cell phone, and said I'd be willing to settle the debt. And they said that I could submit forth my settlement offer. So I followed Florida statute for accord and satisfaction, prominently displayed on a check the accord and satisfaction for that particular debt, and sent it into the medical provider. The medical provider then cashed the check and is now still continuing to call me on my cell phone without authorization, and now threatening to adversely impact my credit report because they didn't think the settlement was high enough.
Yeah. I think you have them. I mean, yeah. if you wrote on the check that this is in full satisfaction of the bill and you referenced the particular bill, I don't know if there were multiple bills or
no.
You know, if there was one bill.
Is that a collection agency you're dealing with currently?
The actual medical provider.
So the provider is doing it. Now, there are certain protections that you have under the Fair Debt Collections Act. And if you contest it and you have a legitimate contesting of the bill, that certainly you have protection. So if it were to go to collections or they try to affect your credit, you know, if it ever were to go that route, you absolutely have a protection where it cannot be a negative mark on your credit. And if something like that were to happen, you know, please reach out to us. We can certainly assist you with that.
Here's how I would go forward. I would write them a letter. I would get a copy of the check front and back and write them a letter and say, here's the check. You accepted it. This is pursuant to Florida law. It's an acceptance. It's a contract that's been offered, and they accepted it. So it's a done deal. If they continue to call you or continue to harass you or turn this over to collection, then you'll seek legal counsel.
Right.
You know?
I had already proceeded with those particular steps. They said that it wasn't satisfactory to them at that point. I pointed out the specific Florida statute. And they had mailed me back a check for the one in the same amount that I had sent into them. I have not cashed that, and I still have that in my possession.
Don't
I refuse to cash it.
No, you need to follow up a letter. Say, you sent me this check back, and it's not acceptable. You don't want anybody to assume that you've kind of accepted their reimbursement. So I would write them a letter back and say, I'm holding the check. I'm not cashing it. Here's a copy of it. This is not acceptable. We have a contract that's been completed for this amount. Period. You got to cover yourself.
Yeah, buyer's remorse basically is what happened. So they agree to accept your payment as payment in full. They change their mind. Guess what? You have an agreement with them that's going to be held enforceable.
What about these continued calls to my cell phone after?
Can't do it.
No, they're not allowed to do that. There are certain protections in the law if there are continual harassment. There's certain calls that can be made. Like if you have attorney representation, they have to cease and discontinue, cease all communications with you. If it's not a valid debt, you can, contest that as an invalid debt. And there are certain procedures under the Fair Debt Collections Act that they have to follow. I don't know if they're going to go ahead and send you to collections or not. In some ways, it's actually easier to deal with a collection agency than individuals like the doctors themselves.
Well, gentlemen, I appreciate your time and your insight. Who would be the best person to follow up at the office?
What you can do is, if you want to talk a little more about it, you can just leave your phone number with Scott's here today. Yes, Scott, and we'll get back with you. Or you can just call us 396-5555. Ask for Chuck or Lloyd.
Awesome. And, I appreciate it very much, gentlemen.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And again, phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. We got a lot of time left here on the Consumer Law Hour. Chuck and Lloyd here in the studio. Stay with us. We are back thank you so much for joining us. I'm really happy to have a second opportunity to introduce this show right here. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Chuck in the studio, as always, today filling in for Eddie. We do have Lloyd. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. Before we touch on these topics, gentlemen, I want to talk about what Fair and Fair is doing for the veterans over the...
Yes, that's important.
Yeah, Veterans Week. So it's free cab rides to the doctor. How does that work?
Well, it's veterans deserve more than a day, okay, to be recognized. We are going to, you know, it's Veterans Week is more like it. That's proper for them. That's respect for them. So it's the whole week. It's Veterans Week, not Veterans Day. And during that week, we're going to provide, we're going back to our cab rides. It's a big, you know, people love it, and it really helps a lot of people. So during that week of Veterans Day, Veterans Week, we're going to provide free cab rides to veterans to and from their doctor's appointments.
So you guys do this over the New Year's holiday and everything, and I took advantage of the service that you guys provided. It saved me close to $50. It was really easy. I just went to keepjacksafe.org. I signed up there. I got my code. I called the cab company. It was a free ride there. Same for the veterans. They can just go to keepjacksafe.org, or they can download the Farrah and Farrah app for their iPhone, Androids, that
kind of thing. Yeah, keepjacksafe.org is our kind of our community service website, and you can go in there. I mean, it's got other things, like if you have we have events where we give away bike helmets for kids.
Yeah, I saw you guys tweeting about that, as well as on your Snapchat.
Yeah, we were there at the town center a few weeks ago when they were stuffing the bus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people know about that, but the United Way had put on this event where people could come in and donate school supplies, backpacks, pencils, paper, whatever, school supplies. And people would come in and they would stuff the bus, actually take their items and put it on the bus until the bus was filled with these supplies. And so what we did is we kind of added a little twist to it. We said, okay, if people can come out and donate if you come out and donate school supplies, then we're going to give you a bike helmet. And it encouraged people to come out and donate supplies. But that was a big hit. Mm-hmm. That was just the last event that we had. But we have events throughout the year where we give away bike helmets to kids.
And you guys were involving the police officers with that too, the ones that were driving through the neighborhoods, and they were actually giving away some bike helmets themselves, which given all the news about police and community relations recently, it seems like that's a win-win for everybody involved.
Right, right. Talking to safety, about bike helmets or safety precautions. So I was reading about, this Jeep recall, Grand Cherokee recall that happened over the last year. And actually, it was a Jeep Cherokee that killed the actor from the Star Trek series.
Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, Anton Yelchin. And I don't know if people remember that, but he was exiting. He thought he had placed his and I'm talking about Jeeps because they're popular vehicles.
They are.
I mean, everywhere you look, there's a Jeep Grand Cherokee. And so that's the reason why I'm talking about this today. If you remember about this actor who died as a result of a defective Jeep, he was exiting his vehicle. He thought he had placed his vehicle in park, okay? Exited the vehicle, walked towards the back of the vehicle, and it rolled down. It was and pinned him against a brick pillar and basically crushed him.
Brick mailbox, yeah.
It's like it was Final a brick Destination mailbox. Stuff.
And it crushed him.
Yeah.
And, people were looking, how did that happen? Well,
these electronic shifters.
Yeah. The Jeep Cherokee has what is called an electronic shifter, which is a very different type of transmission. Normally, you remember the old days, you grab the shifter and you put it in. You can tell that it's in park or it's in reverse or in drive because it's there. You can feel it click in. These shifters are very different, and they don't give you the visual that people are normally accustomed to determine whether their car's in the proper gear.
That would probably lead to more accidents then, right? Just people backing up into other vehicles and things like that when they think they're in park.
Oh, yeah. There have been hundreds of accidents as a result of this Grand Cherokee electronic shifter.
Defects and it changes gear without you even realizing it.
That's right. Scary.
Very.
But there were a lot of reports of injuries. And even before the recall came out, hundreds of inquiries and questions about the shifter and complaints about the shifter were coming in to NHTSA, and they failed to do anything about it until somebody was killed, and then the recall came out. But I think we got to take a break.
Yeah, we got to take a break. Q-Me's and Means, we got to go. But we have a lot of time coming up left. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. And that's 904-340-1045. We'll look at your news, weather, and traffic with Ariel Wysocki coming up next. Welcome back to the only place in town I know of where you can get a free hour of legal advice, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Eddie's gone today, and as always, we do have Chuck and filling in for Eddie. Lloyd, a couple of times on the show now, man. It's right. Really nice to have you back.
It's good to be back. Always fun.
You are good on the radio.
I try.
If the lawyer thing doesn't work out, and obviously it has, but if it doesn't work out for any reason, you at least know you have a backup, and that's got to be comforting in and of itself, no?
Yeah, good to know.
Don't tell him that. We need him over at Farrah and Farrah right now.
And phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. That's 904-340-1045.
Yeah, so I'm getting back to this Jeep Grand Cherokee recall. I mean, we were talking over the break how these Jeeps have a Wi-Fi, and now there's a concern that people can actually hack into the Jeep and take control of the vehicle.
Oh yeah,
freaky.
There already have been some recalls on that. There have already been some recalls on that because you're driving along and someone hacks into it, and oh my God, you lose control of your vehicle. Someone's taking it over for you.
Yeah,
it's happened.
But the problem with this runaway Jeep defect with a shifter thing that we've been talking about, there's been 241 complaints through 2015, and they still keep coming in about how these Jeeps don't, the shifter just doesn't give the visual feedback that drivers are accustomed to. So they think it's in park, but it's not. It's in drive or reverse.
Right. And then they start to get out of the
vehicle. And they get out of the car. Yeah. And it just rolls away. It runs away from them. And, in fact, a more recent complaint is, and I'll quote the person, the Jeep owner who reported this to the National Highway Transportation and Safety Association. There's a place there where you can go and comment or place a claim with them about a potential defect with a car. But it says the shift lever design does not properly allow selection of gears, i.e. park versus reverse versus drive. I have experienced situations where improper gear was selected, leading to unanticipated vehicle movement. The vehicle has been inadvertently in reverse when I thought it would be in park. The button was pushed to stop the engine, but the engine kept running, started the exit, and the vehicle almost crashed into the garage door. So this is like a real recent issue with this person's Jeep that is happening, and it's happening out there. And so people need to be aware of that.
Some of these product liability cases come from. You have multiple complaints. People report it to the companies. Nothing is get done. And then something unfortunately tragic has to happen, mm-hmm. like with the actor that played Chekhov in Star Trek, and get died. That kind of thing has to be brought to attention before they do something about it. Look at Orlando with the kid that was killed because of the alligator at Disney World. Disney has known about this for a long time. They knew gators were in there. Hey, I've been a lifelong Disney fan. Who knew? I had no idea there were gators in there.
And now there's rocks and a fence.
Yeah, they're putting up a brick wall to prevent that from happening.
Yeah. I mean, with this going back to the Jeep, you're so right, Lloyd, because all these complaints were coming in. And in 2015, there were reports given of these events taking place. And Chrysler, who owns Jeep now, was aware of it. And there was no urgency to do anything. But until the death of this actor is when it really hit home.
Right.
And, then they started, then they sent the recall out and everything started happening.
It's almost like the Ford Pinto all over again.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't remember that, in the 70s when Lee Iacocca was running, Ford, they had a screw that was right near the gas tank. And when the Pinto was rear-ended, it jammed the screw into the gas tank, caused a spark, which caused an explosion. And they knew about it. And they knew it was a problem. But until that car caught on fire and killed someone and burned them alive, then they decided, oh, we're going to do something about it. And in the resulting lawsuits that followed, it was basically about like a 30-something cent cap, rubber cap, over that screw that would solve it. But the company didn't do anything about it. You know, and then here we have the same kind of thing. Again, tragedy seems to have to occur
it
before
does.
Some of these companies stand up and take notice to protect the consumers.
Mm-hmm. Being reactive instead of proactive. And again, phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of continue with this product or vehicle defect issue, buyers of used cars need to beware of these recalls, because there's, you know, there's a law that says that if a new cars know about a recall, that they have to repair the new car before it's sold, put into commerce.
Well, how can the buyer be aware? I'm thinking myself going into a car lot and trying to buy a car, which I've been looking recently. And how do I know as a consumer there's
well,
a recall?
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, you know, you've got a federal regulation right now that's in place that says, okay, if you're a new car dealer, you're selling a new car, and you get a notice from the manufacturer that there's a defect, you've got to repair it before you sell it. So you're safe. I mean, if they follow the law, you're protected. But the used car dealers lobbied to get a loophole into that law. And used car dealers are not allowed or not required to repair vehicles on their lot that where there's a recall. So they can sell someone, a consumer, a used car that has a recall.
Yep.
I mean, that's scary.
Is there any sort of liability for the car dealership afterwards if something happens to a consumer in which they sold?
If they know about it, if they know about the recall, there's probably could be some liability. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Failure to warn, right.
But if it's a 8-year-old vehicle and, you know, or a 5-year-old vehicle and there's a recall and I'm the third owner and I'm the used car owner, but I'm the third owner and I don't know about the recall, if I have no knowledge of it, where's the liability?
There's no duty to check for it. Now, obviously, to protect yourself as a consumer, there are dealerships that have those, you know, 20 or whatever, 100-point inspections where they warranty the vehicle for a limited period of time, or they do the checks for a period of time. So when you know you're getting it, you know you're getting a vehicle that's been checked. But a lot of, you know, a lot of used car dealerships, you're getting it as is. You know, it's on you to go get your own mechanic to do your own check.
Right. And what there is a good resource, though, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's Vehicle Identification Tool. It's on their website, NHTSA website. And you can go on there and plug in the VIN number for the vehicle, and it'll pull up all the recalls that are pending or that have been issued over the last, I think, 10 years or so.
So before you actually purchase a car, you take that VIN number,
pull
it up on your smartphone, the NHTSA.com, and you just type in that VIN number right there, and then it'll let you know.
But you still have to be careful to make sure, because, again, the dealership may not necessarily know about a repair under that, the warranty stuff or the recall has been repaired. It's many times up to you to make sure that it's been done.
Now, is there an easy way for the consumer to find like a list of used car dealerships that do make a point? Because if you're saying not all used car dealerships aren't required to fix these, it seems like it could be a selling point for some to say, look, we are one that does. And if so, is there an easy resource for finding them?
Well, I think I don't know the list of all that comply with this recall issue, but I know that they said that AutoNation and American Honda, which are the largest used car dealerships in the United States, are behind fixing the recall before they put it into before they sell it.
Mm-hmm.
So AutoNation, I think, is a used car dealership that's huge, and they're behind checking it out and fixing the recall before.
There's others out there. There's others that are very good at it, but just all it is just be careful. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, and you can check it. You have to do your due. I mean, it's up to the consumer to go research the vehicle.
We got
to
protect ourselves.
Yeah, you got to add it to the list of other things that you check on. You know, if it's been in a prior accident, you know, you got to check if there's a recall.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one good thing, though, I mean, this is all about lobbying. And, of course, you know, you have this rule, this regulation, a federal regulation that requires new car dealers to comply and repair the defect. You know, the used car dealers were able to get a loophole, but the rental car agencies were not, okay? Now they have to repair. They have to repair their. They're not dealers. They rent cars, but they have to. There's a law that says they have to repair the defect. So if they're, you know, any recall has to be repaired by the rental car agent.
Now recalls generally happen a bit after a car's been released, right? Like, they don't do a recall as soon as on brand new cars most of the time, right?
I'm sure there have been cases where a car has been put out there and then immediately they realized that there was some kind of defect. Oh. I couldn't think of one off the top of my head.
Well, good for them for realizing it right away. Like, I got a recall the other day on my car. My car's 2011. Mm-hmm. You know, so it took them, 5 years to figure out that there's something they need to fix on that?
Yeah, but, you know, this is where it takes a tragedy sometimes to make a law change in favor of the consumer. But this rental car law that requires rental car agencies now to repair the defects from recall came out of a tragedy where it's called the Rachel and Jacqueline Houck Safe Rental Car Act. It just came into effect June 1st. Well, these two girls, they were sisters, were going to visit their mother, I think, in California. They rented a car, a PT Cruiser, and there was a defect in the in one of the the vacuum. Where was it? It was a power steering hose. There was a defect in the power steering hose that the rental car agent. I mean, there was a recall. I think the rental car agency knew about it. They weren't under any duty to repair it. They leased this vehicle to these girls. They're cruising down the road. This hose is lying against something that's very hot, and it perforates, the heat perforates it, and there's like flammable liquid or fluid in that hose, going through that hose, and it causes the fire, burned up the vehicle, killed the two girls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That happened like, I think, 15 years ago. And the mother took this, the mother and father fought to get this act, you know, this law in place to make sure that rental car agencies had to repair the defects before they released the vehicle. And, I mean, that's what, you know, it takes a tragedy sometimes to make the law right. So
it does. It does. We just recently saw one where a Ferris wheel collapsed or something like that.
Oh, yeah. That's the next. That's the thing. The amusement park, the kid in Kansas got decapitated.
Well, he wasn't tall enough, too. So there was a couple of different problems. So the safety equipment, the latch wasn't working properly. And then he was also too short for the ride.
Right. Well, the issues are, like, you know, these water slides, I mean, they're very... Basically, the riders are guinea pigs because there's no way the engineers can test every variable that can happen on these tall, huge water slides. You know, think of all the variables. How many people? The weight of the occupant.
Mm-hmm.
Varies. The wind. Right. Okay. You know, I mean, there's so much to consider, and there's no way that you can test it all to create a safe ride. So basically, the riders are guinea pigs. They're the lab, you know, the lab mouse, the lab rats that kind of are there to see if it's safe or not.
Well, don't put it to me like that. I'm in my 30s, but I still enjoy a water park.
Well, listen, most of them are, I'm sure, safe. But the issue is, you know, we're talking about these federal regulations with these recalls. You know, I mean, this. You've got federal regulations for new car dealerships and everything else we've been talking about, but there is no federal regulation for these amusement parks, these permanent amusement parks. And it comes down to the state where the park is to determine the rules and regulations on safety for these parks.
I thought you and Eddie did bring that up a couple of shows ago, too, and that just it blew my mind about how few regulations there are for Disney, for example.
Right. I mean, I can give you some statistics. Between 1990 and 2010, okay, that's about 20 years, all right, 93,000 children under the age of 18 were treated in U.S. emergency rooms for amusement ride-related injuries. That's about 4,400 per year,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And
hey, you want to go ahead and take a phone call really quick before we go to break?
Sure.
No. We can't. Okay. I was getting it. We can't.
Not to cut you off. I apologize for that, Chuck.
All right. Okay.
Hey, Paul, over in St. Augustine, you are live on the Consumer Law Hour. What's on your mind, Paul?
Hi, guys. How you doing? I had a quick question. So I received a recall letter from BMW on my wife's 2011 I-35 for an airbag defect. And knowing all the issues that have been going on with airbags, I'm concerned. They tell me that they will contact me when the parts come in, but it's been 5 or 6 months And I worry every day with her driving around this airbag disaster BMW potentially. What can I do about that?
Yeah, you know, I've heard this from other people. You know, you have this recall. You know it's dangerous because I guess you probably have a Takata airbag in the BMW. And right. It can malfunction because, you know, it's defective. And now, but you can't get it fixed because there are no parts. The parts aren't in yet. I know it's an issue. I don't know. What? Listen, yes. I mean, I've heard this from other people. A friend of mine has the same situation. And she called me and I just couldn't answer the question because I don't know. I mean, listen, you could rent a car and technically you could make a claim for the rental car expense.
Are they telling you it's just not available? What are they saying the delay is for?
I called a couple times and they said when the parts come in, I guess it's obviously a BMW thing, not a dealership thing. So the dealership can't do anything. And when the parts come in, they'll contact me. And, you know, all it takes is a 20 mile an hour collision and that thing explodes in her face. And what are you going to do, right?
You know, I guess in theory, if you were to sell the car because of safety concerns and you had some economic damages affiliated with that, you could, in theory, make a claim for those economic damages, what you lost because of that. I don't really think there's anything you could do to compel them to put it in to force it, especially if the parts just aren't available. Sadly, it is the reactive versus proactive, as Tim was saying, where if you sustain damages because of it, well, then you have a right of compensation. Small consolation, however.
Yeah, I mean, you could maybe rent a car and then make a claim for the rental car expense and rent the car until yours is repaired. But see, this is a result of the manufacturer's lack of urgency. I mean, you know, they knew about these issues long before, and they keep pushing it off, you know, and now it's right in front of them, and because of the time delay, they can't get the parts in. And so people are driving around in these booby traps, and it's just not fair.
Hey, thank you so much for that phone call, Paul. We do have time for one more call if you want to get your call into either Chuck or Lloyd. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Thank you so much for sticking with us here for the Consumer Law Hour on News 104.5 WOKV. My name is Tim Tompkins. The show is brought to you weekly by Farrah and Farrah. It is a free hour of legal advice. Also, I want to throw out that you guys have been really innovative with your Snapchat accounts. And I don't know who exactly runs the Farrah and Farrah Snapchat account, but it's fantastic.
Thank you, Eric.
Eric, very smart guy. Your I don't know guy. Who Eric is, but he does a really good job.
Yeah, he does. He really does. But, you know, getting back to this amusement park incident, you know, you need federal regulation. I mean, there's no standard. There's no sharing of information. If I've got a ride in Oregon, that's like the one in Atlanta, and there's no requirement that they have to share data about incidents that are happening to try to figure out if there's a defect in the design of the. And that's where the federal regulations, I know people don't like regulation and it costs money, but, you know, in safety issues, it's very important to be able to share information so that they can figure out if there's an actual defect. That's not available.
No.
You know, it's up to the states, and the states don't talk to each other, mm-hmm. you know? And some states,
that's a whole
I'm
going to
leave you one
right?
thing. That, where the kid was hurt in Kansas, that ride had never been inspected prior to his death. Never. And we left that up to the state of Kansas to handle. That's what happens.
Awful. Lloyd, you're going to be back next week?
Very possible. Could have to be. All looking right. forward to it.
Thanks for sticking with us. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. The show is produced by Scott Kushner. My name is Tim Tompkins. Look at your news, weather, and traffic with Ariel Wysocki coming up next.